100% compelling, 0% of the time, it's the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. The grass is greener under this Medicare podcast. He knows it's 5 o'clock somewhere. Medicare expert, Doug Jones.
Well, hello again, everyone. Welcome to another exciting episode of the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. As my Canadian nephew, Drew McMillan, may have told you, I am Doug Jones, your Medicare expert for today and maybe for the rest of the week. We'll see how things go. It is wonderful to have you here with us. It is, I'm proud to announce the advent, the arrival in bookstores. In your computer screens everywhere, the Medicare for the Lazy Man 2024. If you go to Amazon.com, and soon if you go to BarnesandNoble.com, you're going to find Medicare for the Lazy Man 2024. For the time being, we can just talk about Amazon. We have the Kindle version of the book. We have the paperback version of the book. And for you high rollers, we have the hardcover version of the book. And that book contains the knowledge that you're going to need if you want to have a successful encounter with Medicare. And it has garnered so many positive reviews from readers and from people who have used it successfully, people who have become my clients, because within the book, I give my contact information and I invite people approaching Medicare to contact me so I can help them make that transition. But if they read the book beforehand, then they'll know exactly what they're talking about and they'll know exactly what I'm talking about. So making sure that you don't buy the wrong coverage, making sure that you buy the correct coverage, the most cost-effective coverage, that's what I specialize in. I help people save money and I help them avoid things that are likely to be disappointing later on. So Medicare for the Lazy Man 2024 is the book you're looking for. And soon it will be available in Audible form, wherein you can just listen to it. And it will be available on the Barnes & Noble website, BarnesandNoble.com, for those who don't really like shopping at Amazon. And I can certainly understand that. So I'd like to provide another outlet. Anyway, join us in greeting Randy Carson, will you please? He is so proud of himself for having become Mr. Greeny Weenie in his neighborhood. Randy, tell us all about it, will you?
Oh my gosh, I'm glad to do it. I'm just so excited. As Doug may have alluded to, I finally made the dive and put solar on my house. And it's up. Ready to start producing power. Unfortunately, there's a few little inspections from the local electric company, Arizona Power Systems, that needs to they need to pass us, give us a thumbs up before we can turn it on. But then I told Doug earlier, before we were warming up for the podcast, there's three switches that I get to turn on that get the thing online after they give me permission. And I'm telling Doug, once I hit those three switches, I will be off the grid, and that will be such a lower demand for power that his lights up in Cave Creek should get brighter.
I'm glad to hear that, because frankly, it's either my vision that's failing me or something's going on, because I spend half of my day squinting at my computer screen, searching for the cursor, the little arrow that I have to stuff before I click. I don't use a mouse. I use a touchpad on my laptop, but the results should be the same. That cursor should always be visible and I should always be able to figure out where it is, but I'm having one heck of a time determining where it is when I start feeling around on that touchpad. I wind up getting more angry and moving my fingers rapidly. And so I'm hoping that you're not sucking power out of the grid from now on
your mouse cursor will probably enlarge to a bigger size I won't be taking power out of the grid now. But on the other hand, if you really have you're having frustrating difficulty, identifying where your mouse cursor is.
Uh-huh.
You can turn on some other features that makes it more visible.
Oh, really? I didn't know such things existed. Why do they keep them secret?
Just so I can make money, since I'm a programmer.
Well, I'll tell you what, in lieu of actual cash, I'll be happy to distribute a book to you.
Oh, my God, I'm going to get one. Oh, thank you, Doug. I've been so looking forward to this.
Well, you know, there's always a price to pay, and that is the price you're going to have to pay, as you do every year, is to post a review, a customer review on Amazon.com, to talk about how fantastic it is that you have now understood everything you need to know about Medicare.
And also, don't forget to tell the folks that I have to stand up on a 40-foot ladder and you know, so I can lay it on the ground and get the angles and the sunshine just right. So it's really, I love the book, but it's really, there's more to it than
there's a cost involved.
There's a little bit of a trade-off, but I'm happy to have one because I've got them right here on my desk. I've had every one since you started. And I show them to people and I go, look, this is the Doug Jones that I told you about. That's the author and all this good stuff. Here's a book. No, you give me that back.
Well, it's ironic that you mentioned that. You've got your row of books starting with, I guess, 2019. Because I received a picture and a very short email. Actually, the email didn't have a message in it. It was just the title. It says, added to my collection. And what the picture in the email was proof positive of the fact that I have a stalker. I don't know if you can see what this is.
Yeah, I can. So it goes from 20 all the way to 24.
That's right. And 24 is the exact color purple that the current book in the bookstores has on the cover. The 2024 numbers are in purple. That was my color choice. And this gentleman who happens to live in New Jersey has saved all the cards, but he somehow managed to get a 2024 business card with my book cover on it before I did. I got this from him yesterday morning, and I hadn't planned to call the printer until yesterday afternoon. So he's either reading my mind or he's climbed right inside my head and he's actually dictating my thoughts. But this is Dominic Regina, of course.
Dominic, oh my gosh, it's Dominic. How are you, Dominic?
He's always got his thinking cap on. What he did this time was scared the heck out of me. Oh my God, what else am I thinking that he's privy to?
So, isn't there a 2019 also?
There was a 2018 that I didn't do a card for. There was a 2019. I guess I probably did a card for 2019, but his collection starts with 2020, and they're fanned out like a poker hand.
And
frankly, I was going to tell him, anytime you have five of the same card, you're going to get shot by somebody else at the poker table, because that's not kosher.
I would call that a straight, but
I think it's a flush. Looks like a flush to me.
Would you call it a flush? Okay.
I think that's that's going one step above and beyond.
Let's call it a royal flush then.
All right. Very good. At some point there's going to be, I hope I live long enough to have accomplished this same thing. It'll be more impressive.
As the nominal producer, do you suppose we ought to do something?
Yes, and let's start with something that's not directly Medicare related, shall we? Let's start with something that's more health related. This is a dichotomy or a bone of contention that I've heard people talk about back and forth recently, and I'm not sure there is a definitive answer that we can sink our teeth into, but the question of the day is, should you take a daily aspirin for your heart? And this is from the Savvy Senior in Oklahoma City. It's a guy named Jim, Nelson or something like that. I forget what his name is, Jim something. And he has a newspaper column that is syndicated in a bunch of newspapers. Not that anybody reads newspapers anymore, but he also takes questions from his adoring audience. And his adoring audience, a bunch of people who have very odd names. So the first question today comes from confused aspirin user. And the question is, I've been taking daily aspirin for almost 20 years now because I have a family history of heart disease. So far, this guy and I are tracking together. But I recently read that using aspirin is not recommended anymore. What can you tell me about this change in philosophy? And the savvy senior says, dear confused, there is no doubt that taking a low-dose daily aspirin is beneficial to most people who have had heart attacks or strokes, but you don't have heart disease. Oh, but if you don't have heart disease, should you take it as a preventative measure? The answer for most people is probably not, according to new guidelines from the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force. Who knew there was such a thing? But another way to burn up tax money, I guess. This is a widely respected independent panel that develops recommendations on preventive health care. Here's what you should know. They have new guidelines. For years, aspirin has been a go-to pill for Americans to help ward off cardiovascular disease because of its blood-thinning capabilities. But like most medications, it can cause serious side effects. Aspirin irritates the stomach lining and can cause bleeding in the stomach, intestines, and brain, which can be life-threatening, and the risk of bleeding increases with age. About one-third of Americans age 40 or older and more than 45% of people age 70 who don't have cardiovascular disease already take a daily aspirin to help prevent cardiovascular disease because it's been recommended for decades by many different health experts. But in the past few years, showing that for many people without diagnosed heart disease, the risk of bleeding may outweigh the benefits of taking a daily aspirin. The next question is, who should take it? There are two categories of people who can still benefit from using aspirin. People with established cardiovascular disease, especially those who have already had a heart attack or a stroke. There's strong evidence that taking daily low-dose aspirin significantly reduces the risk of a second cardiovascular event. And adults aged 40 to 59 with a 10% or higher risk for cardiovascular disease over the next decade. They may see a small benefit to daily aspirin, but it should be an individual decision and discussed with your doctor. Of course, let's discuss everything with our doctor. Who should skip it? People who are 60 and older without established cardiovascular disease who do not currently take a daily aspirin to prevent heart attacks and disease should not start now. Okay, if you're not taking it by age 60 and you don't have heart disease, don't start taking the daily aspirin, it says, according to this article. Because it's the savvy senior doesn't mean he knows what the heck he's talking about. If they already take a daily aspirin, they should ask a doctor about how to proceed if they want to quit because there may be a serious risk associated with suddenly stopping. How to use it safely. The best approach is to talk to your doctor about the potential risks and benefits of aspirin specifically for you because the risk of bleeding rises with dosage. If aspirin is recommended, take the lowest possible amount, which for most people is 81 milligrams. That's a baby aspirin. If you experience any stomach pain, talk to your doctor. You should also know that in 2016, government agency about preventive medicine that I mentioned earlier suggested that daily aspirin use could also help lower the risk of colorectal cancer along with cardiovascular disease. But the group now says there's not enough evidence to support that claim. So they give with one hand and they take with the other. All righty. Ooh, boy, here's something. I can get Randy involved in this, I believe. This is retirees, how to save on healthcare costs that Medicare doesn't cover. And according to the content curator, this paragraph is germane to the subject matter. Being aware of the limitations of Medicare is important for retirees. So you're not caught off guard by a huge bill that you aren't prepared to pay. What healthcare costs does Medicare not cover? And so I'm going to ask Randy about several categories of health costs, health procedures, and I want to know whether Medicare pays any of the freight for some of these things or not. Let's start with long-term care or custodial care. Does Medicare pay for that?
Nope.
Right. That is correct. The majority of dental care.
Nope.
This is another correct answer. Dentures.
Nope.
You know, I'm starting to see a pattern here. I'm going to go down to the bottom. Here's the last item on the list. Will Medicare pay for covered items or services from an opt-out doctor or other provider?
Oh, now you're getting complicated. Oh, an opt-out doctor, they will not pay for any services from an opt-out doctor.
That is correct. Nope.
You have opted out. You need to hit the road, Jack, because we're not going to pay for you.
Well, our buddy Steve down in Texas seems to be surrounded by doctors who have opted out. I mean, when he became my client, he had difficulty dealing with the fact that his doctors do not take Medicare, two or three of them, I guess. So you're right. I think there are a couple of nopes remaining for the items that I skipped over, but I think the contest coordinator, the lady who colors everything yellow in my articles here, got enthusiastic about the fact that we could have a quiz. She didn't think about the fact that the answer is nope to every one of the items on this list.
She didn't think about it.
No, she sure didn't. So how to save on healthcare expenses for things that Medicare doesn't cover. Here are some options for covering those healthcare costs that Medicare doesn't cover. Medigap or Medicare Advantage plans. Oh, boo hiss on Medicare Advantage.
What are you talking about there, Doug?
Well, let me get some of the detail out here and let's see if it...
Are they talking about Medicrap?
Well, they said Medigap first, which is okay. That's the good stuff. Medicrap would be the bad stuff.
That would be the advantage part.
That's correct.
Or disadvantage part.
That is absolutely correct. Oh, you know what we should do before I tear into this list? I'm going to try something new here. Let's break for a commercial, Randy. Well, I was disturbed by an advertisement we had that was in Spanish. Now, we live in America. Our audience is a bunch of Americans, and we speak American here. We don't speak no Spanish lingo. So I want our advertisers to only do ads in English, if you please. I'm sure they're listening. So here we go again, back to the items that Medicare doesn't cover and how to save some money on them. Reducing expenditures for long-term care, dental work, eye exams, often covered by additional health insurance programs like Medigap or Medicare Advantage plans, which typically expand coverage beyond what Medicare alone offers, can be designed into your retirement plan. Okay, that made very little sense. Health savings accounts. Do this before you retire. Invest in a health savings account, funds that you can use for qualified medical expenses and are tax exempt. You could massage therapy is one item that they'll cover that Medicare won't cover. Dentures, even regular physicals. Understand the specifics, and these accounts can be a key way to keep healthcare costs in check upon retirement. Local community health care options. On top of that, use local community preventive care. There are plenty of organizations that offer reduced price, if not free, services such as eye exams and dental care. If you learn about local events such as health fairs and health screenings in the community, you might be able to catch any health issues before they become expensive treatments. Long-term care insurance. Long-term care insurance is intended to cover services like nursing home care, assisted living, and home health care. I believe that buying this insurance can be a proactive step to prepare for future long-term care needs. It provides financial support for services that are not typically covered by Medicare. Standalone dental and vision insurance. As per my observation, standalone dental and vision insurance plans can be purchased to cover routine checkups, dental procedures, and eyewear expenses. Some Medicare Advantage plans also include dental and vision coverage, offering retirees more options to address these specific healthcare needs. A cautionary note, though, from me, Dougie, you should be very careful. If you're a Medicare Advantage rat, and you did it because of the dental insurance, make sure that it is actually dental insurance and not one of those stupid discount plans. Make sure that you can go to any dentist you want to, rather than being stuck with their list of recent dental school graduates, because that's who they're most likely to have included for free in a Medicare Advantage dental plan. The last thing you can do is pay in cash. When talking about services Medicare doesn't cover, the best way, in my opinion, according to the author here, is to pay in cash or to offer to pay in cash. Many chiropractors and such are small businesses. The headache often associated with Medicare supplements and secondaries can take up hours of a staff member's time, which ultimately costs the business money. Well, that could have been a more satisfying article. Should I buy long-term care insurance? Now, this is an important element of your potential Medicare and health insurance planning. Long-term care insurance is very much like life insurance, and we discussed it in the last episode, and I feel that I did not offer a very clear picture of the long-term care experience, because I read two different articles that were at odds with each other. One was from the New York Times talking about how much trouble that long-term care insurance companies were having maintaining benefits. And the other was a list of myths, long-term care myths. And I'm just not sure that I was able to draw a very clear picture. So this is a little shorter article that asks the question, should I buy long-term care insurance? And it's once again from the Savvy Senior. So if you like the aspirin answer, you'll love this. The question is, my wife and I have thought about purchasing long-term care insurance policy, but we hate the idea of paying expensive monthly premiums for a policy that we may never use. Is there a good rule of thumb on who should or shouldn't buy long-term care insurance? And this was signed Getting Old. So the Savvy Senior says, dear Getting, there are two key factors you need to consider that can help you determine if purchasing a long-term care insurance policy is a smart decision for you and your wife. One factor is your financial situation, and the second is your health history. Currently, around 8 million Americans own a long-term care insurance policy. As the cost of long-term care, which includes nursing home, assisted living, and in-home care, as those costs continue to rise, it's important to know that most people pay for long-term care either from personal savings or from Medicaid when their savings are depleted, or through a long-term care insurance policy. The national median average cost for nursing home care today is around $92,000 a year, while assisted living averages around $50,000 per year. National statistics show that about 70% of Americans age 65 and older will need some kind of long-term care. The fact is, many people don't need to purchase a long-term care insurance policy. The reasons stem from a range of factors, including the fact that relatively few people have enough wealth to protect, to make purchasing a policy worthwhile. Seniors with limited financial resources who need long-term care can turn to Medicaid to pick up the tab after they run out of money. Now, nobody really wants to run out of money, Savvy Senior. Another important factor is that most seniors who need long-term care only need it for a short period of time, recovering from surgery. For those people, Medicare covers in-home health care and nursing home stays of 100 days or less, following a hospital stay of more than 3 consecutive days. Sure, Medicare covers that. Try getting that out of a Medicare Advantage plan. There are quite a few horror stories about people covered by Medicare Advantage plans who cannot get the proper after-surgical care. So I'm saying be very careful. If you have a Medicare Advantage plan, be prepared for a fight. So the question is, who should consider buying a long-term care insurance policy? Well, they make the most sense for people who can afford the monthly premium and who have assets of at least $150,000 to $200,000 or more that they want to protect. And this doesn't count their homes and vehicles. Another factor to weigh is your personal health and family history. The two most common reasons that seniors need extended long-term care is because of dementia and or disability. And almost half of all people who live in a nursing home are 85 years or older. So what's your family history for Alzheimer's, stroke, or some other disability or disabling condition? And do you have a family history of longevity? You enter as well. Because women tend to live longer than men, they are at greater risk of needing extended long-term care. Choosing long-term care insurance. After evaluating your situation, if you're leaning towards buying a long-term care insurance policy, be sure to do your homework. The cost of premiums can vary greatly, ranging anywhere between $2,500 and $8,000 per year for a couple, depending on your age, the insurer, and the policy's provisions. Also note that because of coronavirus, it may be more difficult to qualify for coverage now if you are age 70 or older, or if you're in a high-risk group, or if you had a positive COVID-19 test. To find a policy, get an LTC, a long-term care insurance specialist, who works with a variety of companies. There's an American Association of Long-Term Care Insurance website. Also, you can shop insurers like Northwestern Mutual, New York Life, Genworth. John Hancock has long-term care. They started the long-term care industry. They were one of the first, but now they only have life insurance with a long-term care rider, which isn't necessarily a bad deal. This article goes on to say another option you may want to consider is a hybrid policy that combines long-term care coverage with life insurance. These policies promise that if you don't end up needing long-term care, your beneficiaries will receive a death benefit. So therefore, there are options for people who don't want to pay for the policy and then not ever need the benefits. So we move on to another category here, and I'm not even going to quiz Randy on this because the answer is going to be the same for every one of these items. And we're close to running out of time. 8 myths about hospice care. So let's slide through this quickly, shall we? Hospice myth number 1, patients cannot live past 6 months. That means when Medicare deems you to have entered the hospice phase of your life, it lasts for 6 months and then they throw you right out of there. But that's not true. That's a myth. What happens is Medicare extends your hospice status as long as you need to be in that category of patient. And you get special stuff when you're in hospice. When Medicare considers you to be a hospice patient, there are bennies and perks that go along with that. Hospice myth number 2, hospice care is only for people with cancer. And that's not true. Only about half of all hospice patients have a primary diagnosis of cancer. The other half has one of a number of different terminal illnesses. Hospice myth number 3, hospice is a physical place. Well, this is mostly a myth. Care can happen at home, in a nursing facility, in an assisted living, or in an inpatient hospice facility. Although there are some physical hospice facilities, care is more often than not provided where the patient actually lives. Hospice myth number 4, care is only for the patient. Well, the answer to that is, while comfort care for the patient is a huge focus within hospice, that's not all it does. Did you know that spiritual, emotional, and grief support are also available for family members? Hospice aims to provide a higher quality of life for everybody involved. Hospice myth number 5, once you're in, you can't change your mind. It's like a roach motel. You go into hospice, you can't go out. Well, in reality, hospice care is about comfort over cure. However, if a patient and their family decide to leave hospice and pursue curative treatment elsewhere, they're allowed to do that. Also, if a patient's prognosis happens to change while receiving hospice, they may discontinue those services as well. Hospice myth number 6, palliative care is the same as hospice care. Well, I think the answer to this is no, it's not. Palliative care is any type of medical or holistic care that provides symptom relief. It may not be received as part of hospice, but the two are not the same thing. It may be received as part of hospice, but the two are not the same thing. A person does not have to be terminally ill to use palliative care. Hospice myth number 7, hospice is only for senior citizens. Although the majority of patients are over the age of 65, around 20% are younger. Hospice care is for anyone who needs end-of-life care. And finally, hospice myth number 8. It is expensive, but the truth is, since the vast majority of those who use this service are over the age of 65, Medicare will pay. Medicare benefits will pay for hospice when a senior is certified as terminally ill by their doctor. Almost all care is covered at very little or no cost. So, by golly, that's not a bad way to end the episode. If we need hospice care, that's likely to be taken care of, Randy.
Well, you know, something that does sound good.
Something to look forward to. Give me some of that hospice, huh?
Give me some of that hospice care. Definitely staying away from that is a huge desire of mine.
Maybe I got too enthusiastic. Let me rethink my position.
Well, you know something? We need to close up shop here, Doug.
I know. It's come to an end.
We have spent our 75 cents. I don't know what else to say, but it's gone. So you guys that are listening to Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast, get out a pencil. Take down this email address, dbj@mlmmailbag.com, because that is how you reach out to Doug Jones, the master of the universe of Medicare supplement planning.
Wow.
And he is licensed nationwide, if I didn't mention that. Ultimately, you can also check us out at the website, medicareforthelazyman.com. We would appreciate a couple reviews here and there, because we do produce a lot of good content, and ultimately, we've got a new book on the market, 2024, yes, Medicare for the Lazy Man, 2024. And Doug told me earlier, I am going to get a copy. So I am going to look forward to that. I'm hoping he'll deliver it to my house with a Guinness, but you just never know.
Or maybe I'll enjoy one while I'm there.
Well, yeah, well, we could do that too. While I am getting my multiple portraits taken with the new book, I will have a Guinness in the other hand. What do you think of that?
Perfect.
Well, thanks for joining us. You could have been a number of different places, but you weren't. You were with us, which is exactly where we'd like to have you, listening to Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. And if you weren't looking at your watch, it lasted today about 32 and a half minutes listening to Doug Jones, the anti-insurance guy from Oklahoma. No more. He's up in the high ground behind Cave Creek, Arizona. And I've got to tell you today, I'm a little disappointed about the temperature. We are sitting at 63 degrees, so that means Doug is probably up over 12,000 feet.
Ouch. Thank you so much, Randy, and thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us. We'll look forward to having you with us again on our next episode. Bye-bye.